Hi everyone! Before we start the conversation, I wanted to let you know about a special offer at the Cook Political Report. For just $99, you can get our Election Pass, which gives you all our analysis from now until Election Day. You can check it out at cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Okay, on to the odd years. I'm Amy Walter. Welcome to the Odd Years. Right before President Biden dropped out of the race, his path to victory appeared very narrow. It was basically this: win the Midwest states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. But with Kamala Harris now at the top of the ticket, the electoral map looks like it's opening up for Democrats in some of those states that Joe Biden won in 2020, but seemed out of reach in 2024, are back in play. Today, I wanted to focus on one of those states, Georgia. Biden won the state narrowly in 2020, thanks in large part to significant turnout and support from the Black community. Recent national polls show Kamala Harris running stronger with younger voters and voters of color than Biden was doing. This helps to explain why her campaign chose Atlanta for her kickoff rally on Tuesday night. And at that rally, the enthusiasm was through the roof.
So, Georgia, it is so good to be back, and I am very clear. The path to the White House runs right through this state.
Donald Trump campaigned at the very same spot just a few days later. My guest today is Maya King. She's a New York Times political reporter for the Southeast. She's based in Atlanta. I wanted to talk to her about what she's hearing from voters in the state and whether Harris's entrance into the race has changed the dynamics in that state. We spoke on Friday afternoon, a day before Trump's Atlanta rally, and 2 days after his contentious appearance at the National Association of Black Journalists, where he, among other things, questioned Harris's Black identity. Hi, Maya. Great to see you.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Maya, you have spent a lot of time in the Southeast. You have covered the vice president extensively. Tell us, first of all, about her campaign kickoff in Atlanta this past week. This was on Tuesday night.
Yes, Tuesday evening in downtown Atlanta. So the heart of the Democratic heartbeat of a battleground state. And Harris, this was her sixth trip to Georgia. She's visited the state about once a month, either in an official capacity for some of these economic opportunity tours that she's been taking, or to also hold campaign events. Atlanta, I think it's safe to say, is very friendly territory for her. And that was confirmed on Tuesday night. I have never seen a Democratic Party event that was more fun and exciting and star-studded and packed with people. There were about 8,500 people that filled a convocation center. The line stretched outside and down the block. Megan Thee Stallion, the rapper, performed. Quavo, who was also an Atlanta-based rapper, didn't even perform, though he's very popular. He actually came up on stage to tell people to vote. So the feeling in the room was just this sense of Democratic jubilation, but also relief, I think. That the party had at the top of the ticket now someone who could articulate a much clearer message, who represented a lot of the key groups that are going to need to turn out in Georgia. Black voters, Asian voters, women, Black women. These are all sort of key Democratic constituencies in Metro Atlanta. And someone who I think the party feels has put the state back in play. And so while everyone was excited to see Harris, and Atlanta is of course, a place that she visits often, people were just really relieved to have this shift.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to define it, Maya. The difference between being relieved and being enthusiastic. Is there a difference there? In other words, they're just relieved to finally have a candidate who can take the fight to Trump? Or are they enthusiastic about the fact that it is a woman and a woman of color who's going to be doing that?
I think it's both. I think there is relief that there is a stronger candidate atop the ticket, And that relief has given rise to enthusiasm. Mm. Speaking to folks in the building, a lot of people were first-time rally goers who had never shown up even for Warnock and Ossoff at the height of the Senate campaigns in 2020 that we thought sort of reached a fever pitch. And I asked a few people, would you have been here if Biden had a rally? And they said, no, probably not. So it feels like she has a base of voters now who are very fired up for her and very excited for the party again.
You know, Maya, when I first met you back in 2019 and you were covering the campaign then, and I remember talking with you and you writing stories about Kamala Harris's inability to coalesce the Black vote at that time. Talk to us a little bit about what you saw back then and what's happening now.
Yes, that was a huge problem that she faced in actually being able to galvanize Black support in an all-important state in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. There were, I think it started with a number of political leaders, sort of the influential state house representatives who decide pretty early who they'd like to sort of support. And Joe Biden and Cory Booker seemed to take up a lot of the oxygen in that primary. And of course, a lot of this was rooted in pragmatism. Black voters at the time did not feel like anyone other than a white man would really be able to win against Trump, even if they liked Harris or Booker and what they represented. And now, 4 years later, I think, one, Harris is a stronger candidate. She has a record that she can run on that's a little clearer now, having been vice president. And the party, frankly, the party was in a place where they didn't have much of a choice to skip over Harris when Biden stepped aside, I think would have created a real crisis for the party. And there were a lot of Black voters then who said, you know, we're going to stand behind Biden after his pretty poor debate performance, but added the caveat, if he does step aside, it does need to be the vice president, one for procedural reasons and two for because of the optics. Right. And so now you really have seen a shift. People have fully embraced Harris. I certainly have heard concerns about, while Black voters may turn out en masse for Harris in November, they also are looking to their white liberal counterparts and saying, will you do the same? They are wondering if, you know, white independent voters will feel comfortable enough to support a Black woman for president. So there's still, I think, that sort of cold political calculus there. Right. And in the coming days, of course, we'll get a vice president announcement. And that will almost certainly be a sort of regular white man. And maybe that will alleviate some of those concerns.
Maya, you've also covered the vice president a lot while she was campaigning in Georgia as vice president or going down there for official visits. Again, can you compare how she was responded to and how she interacted with folks on Tuesday night at the rally versus what you've seen from her previous visits to the state and the reaction that she's gotten from voters and also the way you think she has responded or the strength or maybe weaknesses that she had as vice president and how it translates to today?
So Harris had embarked on this economic opportunity tour to predominantly Black cities across the country earlier this year. And she launched that tour here in Atlanta. That was in her official capacity as vice president. And there just was, it was a very policy focused, very official White House event that also included some celebrity, maybe panelists or moderators, but the crowd was very controlled. These were local business owners, Democratic organizers, and a smattering of maybe Morehouse College students. And they capped it at like 250 people. Fast forward 3 months, here we are with a totally different ticket.
Yeah.
And at one point during her Atlanta rally, Harris had to stop and say, I have to get to the business now, because people were screaming and chanting so much. I think it's the internet memification of her campaign that has brought so many people into the fold. Again, there's the relief element there. Beyonce giving Harris sort of the green light to use her music for her walkout song. There's just so much built up enthusiasm now. It was almost as if Democrats were just waiting for someone to fill this void. I had talked to organizers, I would say, you know, even 2 weeks ago, shortly after the debate, who said, we're just going to go into communities with a message of saving democracy and making sure that Black voters know their power, and we'll try to keep the state as competitive as possible and maybe make some inroads in the state house. And now I talked to them this week and they're like, we thought it was lost. We thought it was lost. We didn't think we were going to be able to lead with Biden. And now we have Harris, who seems to have more young voter support, seems to have more Black voter support, more support from women. And so now they can lead with the candidate. And I think that's made a huge difference.
Right. Well, let's talk about the fact that this weekend, we're taping this on Friday, and this weekend, Donald Trump is going to be, I think, at that exact same venue, right? He's going right into the heart of Atlanta, basically saying to the Harris campaign, we aren't going to cede this territory to you. We've seen polling, again, previous polling when Biden was in the race, suggesting that Trump was getting in the state of Georgia upwards of 20% of the Black vote. Talk to us a little bit about the inroads that he has made, maybe, or hasn't, you know, what you're reporting sort of bears out, and then how you think this changes it, given that the top of the ticket switch has altered that calculus.
I do believe that there is a universe of Black voters, particularly young, sort of middle to low information Black men, who are very interested in and likely to support Trump. If you talk to Republicans, they will tell you they think they're going to get 20% of that demographic. I think that is a little bit of a stretch, especially now. And one of the things I think that's getting in their way is the way that not only the former president, but many Republican leaders are talking about Harris. Harris herself as a candidate is still a bit undefined. Mm-hmm. She has a policy record that hasn't been fully vetted, I think, by the GOP. But instead of going the route of sort of interrogating that policy record, Republicans have jumped straight into race and gender. And in doing so, have one, only further created, I think, a blowback dynamic with Black voters who were already going to support Democrats, who are going to be more aggressive in talking to their own relatives who are Trump curious. And two, I think removed the permission structure for a lot of Trump curious Black voters to feel good about voting for him. However, the fact that he is going to, you know, Trump has visited Georgia and is usually an hour to an hour and a half outside of the capital city in more red rural areas. The fact that he's visiting the heart of Atlanta, less than a mile from the state capital, like the very sort of central area, very heavily Black neighborhood, I am very curious about who shows up to this rally and whether he has a message for Black voters beyond immigrants taking your jobs. And if he, which this is a stretch now, but if he tries to sort of further define or maybe clean up some of his comments about Harris.
This was a perfect setup for what also happened this week, of course, was Donald Trump sitting down at the National Association of Black Journalists conference in Chicago. You were there. Can you tell us what happened? We know that the headlines, which were, it was a testy, I think is a fair assessment of it, but Donald Trump right out of the gate suggesting that the vice president's race was not black, or I don't know even how he questioned what her ethnicity was. So, and then, as you said, noted that he was not only the best president for black voters since Abraham Lincoln, but that his job was to protect black voters from losing their jobs to immigrants. So tell us your impression from being there in the room, and then we can talk about the impact you think that has as he rolls into Atlanta this weekend, trying to appeal to black voters.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, the feeling in the room was very tense. There was, of course, a lot of controversy around the decision to even invite Trump to this conference in the first place. And so I think the fact that he was given these really tough questions from some reporters made him feel really uncomfortable. And also the optics of him criticizing and sort of going back and forth with this panel of black women journalists was also not a great look for him either. I think he saw his appearance at NABJ as one, a chance to talk directly to black voters, and two, to deliver a message about how he can appeal to black voters to his broader voting base. So he repeated a number of things that I think many people found offensive. He seemed to suggest that Harris was Indian and then decided to be black, even though the vice president is biracial and has attended a historically black college and is a member of many black organizations. So sort of trying to discount her black identity very baselessly. He also repeated his claim about black jobs, which a number of black voters and leaders really have found offensive, because it seems to suggest that you think there is a universe of jobs that are only for black Americans. And just was his usual sort of combative and bombastic self.
I mean, Maya, do you think he came there, and I don't know the backstory about when he agreed to do this, but my sense from just being at the RNC in Milwaukee, curious your sense on this too, was they were feeling incredibly confident. They had highlighted a number of voices at the RNC that were black and Latino voices. And that, did he go into this thinking, you know, I'm just going to use this as really as an opportunity to prove that I can make real inroads with these voters, that this is not just, you know, something that is a mirage, but it's the real deal. Or did he go here, do you think, with the intent of having this exact fight, of saying, look, I have to push back on the fake news and the liberal media, and I am your, to his supporters, I am your voice pushing back on this?
I think he wanted to have a fight, but the fight was really not with reporters. It was with now the Harris campaign. This birtherism tactic is meant to divide and conquer. And I think this is the exact kind of message that he wants to push to not only amp up his base, but to force the Harris campaign to now respond and engage in a debate around the vice president's, the Democratic presumptive presidential nominee's racial identity. And now we're no longer talking about anything substantive relating to policy, where we've completely waded into the culture war. I think that's the kind of fight that Trump wants to have. And he also needs a data point like the National Association of Black Journalists conference to say, I sat in front of a room of black journalists and told them my policy, or told them what I plan to do as president if reelected, and look at how they treated me.
Right. Yeah, it is notable that when asked about this, his vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance, said, well, we're just highlighting her chameleon-like stance, right? She's flip-flopped on a lot of issues. This is just one more piece of evidence that she's not who she says she is, right? But talking about flip-flopping on issues, okay. Right. Great. She said this about fracking, now she says that. She said this about healthcare, now she says that. Right. But we're not talking about issues, really. Did we talk about her flip-flop? Was that part of the conversation at all was that she had flip-flopped on issues?
No, no. And no. I will also note that this conversation was cut short by about 30 minutes. So even if there were further questions for him to answer about how his policy record differs from that of the Biden administration, he was gone before he could actually have that conversation.
Right. And so now let's pivot into coming into Georgia. Again, I as I recall, this is a state where Trump got maybe 9% of the vote from Black voters in 2020. Yeah, and he's talking about getting, you know, upwards of, certainly in the double digits, but as you said, maybe even up to 20%. Do you think that's realistic? And given what happened yesterday or this week, that it is, it makes it even more difficult.
I look to on the ground engagement here and for mm-hmm. any signs of momentum with this bloc. There are no, from what I understand, sanctioned sort of Black voters for Trump sustained organizations in the metro Atlanta area that are really that involved. And I think that what the Trump campaign might be taking for granted is that this is a base that you have to offer serious permission structure to for them to feel comfortable enough to vote for you. And so a rally in the heart of metro Atlanta with a few talking points is going to get the people who were already at the rally to support you. But the folks who are not there, who might not even want to be seen there, but still might like Trump and what he says, I think need something more. There's, of course, a trend here of Black men who are Trump curious. But I just think it's softer than the Trump campaign might realize.
Mm. And is it softer because these are men who may be curious but are not sold? Or is it softer because these are men who just may not really turn out? They're not really reliable voters.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's both, honestly. Not reliable voters and might just not be that enthusiastic about Trump to turn out for him.
Yeah. And that's where it seems, Maya, that we're really even more so than we were with Biden, of course, but that the gender gap with white voters has been there for a long, long time. And now we're seeing this with voters of color, and the Trump campaign is very committed to really exploiting this gap, basically saying for younger, but all Latino men, Black men, I'm your guy. And we saw it again at the convention. It was a masculine forward, shall we say, Hulk Hogan, Kid Rock, the UFC fighters, the whole thing. I'm the strong guy. And now he's up against a woman. Is it possible for you to talk at all about some of the like gender dynamics? We've only been here one time before. We had Hillary Clinton, of course. There was a lot of conversation after that election about the stat of white women supporting Donald Trump and Black women overwhelmingly supporting Clinton. Are we kind of getting back into that territory, do you think, where we're going to have these conversations once again about where male voters go, not just because of Trump, but because of some of the sexist, gendered issues that, quite frankly, are still part of our culture?
I mean, I get the sense that we are going to witness and see both just across in these battleground states, a lot of really tough conversations. I think this is certainly one of the fears and concerns that Democrats have, if that this could possibly exacerbate a gender gap. A lot of the young men of color I've spoken to who say they will support Trump love that he's a strong leader, love that he has a base of people who are raucous and have fun and sort of form almost community at his events. I think there's, of course, a little bit of mis and disinformation there around Trump's policy record relative to Biden's or now possibly Harris's. And Yes, I'm this is something that I'm following really closely and wanting to really unpack is how this shows up in particular for Black voters who have always considered themselves very pragmatic, who define their overwhelming support of Democrats in terms of political survival, or really just plain survival, who take this idea of preserving democracy very seriously. My question is, what happens when you bring the culture into that? When you say, okay, well, Trump, I feel was better for me on the economy, was better for my livelihood, was made it easier for me to provide for myself and my family. And he talks about that in these very aggressive terms from the stage or in any of his addresses. That appeals to me on a cultural level, and that's why I'm going to vote for him versus policy, democracy, and sort of preservation of democratic norms that I think a lot more women take seriously because we're already seeing this in policy as it relates to abortion. This is a topic that Harris, I think, has been really strong in delivering a message on. Voting rights, a huge topic in front of mind for many Black voters in Georgia. So I think there are some of these competing issues, if that makes sense, that could possibly warp how people are thinking about this election.
It is. It's fascinating. You are in a state where you have so many cross currents to dig into. I'm quite frankly jealous of
Come
all
to
you get
Atlanta,
to.
Amy. Come
I'm
down.
going to
Come
come to
south.
Atlanta. Woo! One other thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that, again, if we had talked Maya a year ago or maybe a year and a half ago, we would have one of our first topics of discussion would be the indictments in the Georgia case, right? The
Remember
fact
that?
that remember we had the former president and many of his associates and allies indicted on the fake elector and the interference in the election. It's obviously now on indefinite hold, it seems. We are most certainly not having a trial this year. Whether we have a trial at all is yet to be seen as well. Does anybody even talk about this, Maya?
The waters are so muddied there, Amy, and people do talk about it, but do you know what they talk about now? Fani Willis and her relationship with Nathan Wade.
So it became a soap opera story instead of a story about what happened in the 2020 election.
It has become part 2020 story, Trump and democracy, part office romance. And obviously, I can't put these two on equal footing. But I just think in the minds of
In
voters who
voters'
are not
minds, yeah.
following this as closely, that is what pops into their mind first, because that's the foot that we left this off on. Or
Left off
that's,
on the relationship, Fani Willis. Absolutely. And so, between the fact that we don't have the federal cases are also stalled, and you're right, this became for non-regular for voters who just don't regularly tune in to politics. The thing that they probably know the most of is, yeah, I heard about this, and didn't she have a relationship with the guy she was working with who was supposed to, right? They went on some fancy vacation. Yeah, that sticks. It's
It
a very
does.
sticky story,
It does.
more so than the complications around a RICO statute and what that means.
And to be sure, there are people who want to see this case move forward, Democrats and Republicans, for their own reasons, but it's just gotten so clouded.
But the fact that Donald Trump called the Secretary of State in 2020, said, I need another 11,000 votes. There are these other people who have been indicted on this fake elector, the whole scheme, is not part of the day-to-day conversation about why voters in the state. If you're the Harris campaign or if you're Democrats, to make the case, look, the reason to vote against Donald Trump is whether this case comes to trial or not, we know these things have happened. Is
Right.
that at all part of the conversation?
It is. That is still part of the conversation. People were very, very shocked when the audio of that call was released. And I think it made people realize the Democratic stakes here in Georgia and in these elections. And I think that's still a winning line for Democrats. This is the candidate who tried to bully the Secretary of State into finding votes. And for Republicans, you'll remember the former Republican Party chair in Georgia was also indicted as one of the fake electors. This is a rallying cry. They're coming for you. They already came for Trump. They already came for your state leader. They might come for you too. This is why we have to stand and support him. So that moment in 2020 is still very much a part of the conversation. I think when you start to get into the trial and the timeline there, you have some fall off. You lose people.
Right, right. Maya, you have such a cool job. You have so much more to dig into. I will. I'm going to come down to Atlanta. I want to see this for myself because Please. You're right. Just all the different cross currents involved in this are fascinating. And thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. So glad to be here. And I'll see you in Atlanta.
See you then. Thank you so much for listening to The Odd Years. If you liked what you heard or want to make a suggestion, leave us a review or recommend us to a friend. You're our best way to get the word out about what we do. If you'd like to explore more of what we have to offer, consider subscribing at cookpolitical.com/subscribe. And we have a very special offer right now, our election pass. For just $99, you can get access to all of our analysis from now until Election Day. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe to learn more.